I don't like to misplace things. It frustrates me. And I would say I'm not bad about misplacing. What I do, though, when I am like a place at a coffee shop, I work from coffee shops a lot, I'm a triple pat to make sure I got everything when I go. It's a 1, 2, 3. So it's phone, chapstick, keys, wallet. Now, it really throws me for a loop when I'm wearing like sweatpants and I don't have a back pocket, or in winter when I got like vest pockets. It messes with me because they're in different spots. But I don't like to misplace things. It's frustrating. Around our house, I'm known as the finder. I find things. I don't lose them most of the time. But losing things is frustrating. And one way we avoid losing or misplacing things is when we put them in a consistent spot, right? If you got the key ring by the door, or in the correct spot, if things go in a certain drawer or a certain spot in the house, that helps us not lose things. And I want us to look at something today, maybe a little less physically tangible, that we tend to misplace and sometimes even lose. And that is our confidence. We're going to talk about confidence today. Now, different things in life may happen to make us lose confidence, but oftentimes we don't lose it, we misplace it. We put it in the wrong spot. Maybe we've placed our confidence in ourselves, in our money, in our personality, in our stuff, in our status, when our confidence should always be placed in God. The confidence we have for ourselves should stem from our confidence in God. See, our confidence isn't self-confidence, it's God-confidence. That's kind of our takeaway for today. Our confidence isn't self-confidence, it's God-confidence. And it comes from the God who has created us as how we are and who is God in our lives. He gives us our confidence, and confidence will be our brick today in our series on Nehemiah. If you haven't been with us, we are in week 6 of our series on the book of Nehemiah. We're just walking through the entire book this summer. And each week we've been looking at a different theme that we're calling a brick that God uses to build us as his followers of him, but also how he builds his church. So here's a quick recap. If you haven't been with us or you aren't familiar or need a little reminder, Nehemiah was cupbearer to the king. When Nehemiah found out the wall around Jerusalem had been torn down, burned down, was in total ruins, and this really distressed Nehemiah. He mourned, he fasted, he prayed, and eventually went to King Artaxerxes, asked and received permission to go rebuild the wall around Jerusalem. So he goes and he gets lots of people involved and starts the build. And he ran into some opposition and some threats as he was going, and he developed methods of protection while he was out there doing this. Now that opposition and threat idea, that's going to come back today, so keep that in your mind a little bit. But then last week, he got away from the wall a little bit because he realized there were systems and structures within the people, kind of how things were going, that were really hurting the people. So he restored those systems for the betterment of all the people and then returned to his work on the wall. And today, we're going to see how he needs the confidence of God to keep going. So we'll be in Nehemiah 6. We're going to break it into 3 sections today. Chris will have it on the screens up here. You can follow along there. The Bibles on your tables are bookmarked if you'd like to follow along there. If you have a phone, tablet, computer, would like to follow along, that is great. I will be in the NIV translation. You can follow along there. So we are going to kick it off today with Nehemiah 6, verses 1 to 9. It says this. When word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem the Arab, and the rest of our enemies that I had rebuilt the wall and not a gap was left in it, though up to that time I had not set the doors in the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message: come, let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. But they were scheming to harm me, so I sent messengers to them with this reply: I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? 4 times they sent me the same message, and each time I gave them the same answer. Then the 5th time, Sanballat sent his aide to me with the same message, and in his hand was an unsealed letter in which was written: it is reported among the nations, and Geshem says it's true, that you and the Jews are plotting to revolt, and therefore you are building the wall. Moreover, according to these reports, you are about to become their king and have even appointed prophets to make this proclamation about you in Jerusalem: there is a king in Judah. Now this report will get back to the king, so come, let us meet together. I sent him this reply: nothing like what you are saying is happening. You're just making it up out of your head. They were all trying to frighten us, thinking their hands will get too weak for the work and it will not be completed. But I prayed, now strengthen my hands. So the wall is close to completion. Now we're close. Only the doors and the gates need to be set. Now once those are set in place, any opposition or enemies, they would have to lay full siege to Jerusalem, which they don't really want to do. There's no easy access once those gates are set. So what the opposition does to Nehemiah is they send a message, say, hey, let's meet. Let's just get together. Let's talk about it. And they pick this spot called the Plain of Ono, and this is in the westernmost area of where the exiled Jews had returned to. And it would have been probably more than a day's journey for Nehemiah to get there. Now, even though it's presented as a neutral site, Nehemiah knows they're up to something. This is a trap. They're coming for me. So Nehemiah doesn't tell him he knows what they're up to. He just says, hey, look, I'm doing this great work. I'm really busy. I'm not taking a pause in it to come and meet with you. Opposition sends the same message four times. Four times Nehemiah says, no, not coming. Fifth time, finally, Sanballat's messenger comes with an open letter. Now, usually letters in this day, they've been rolled up, tied, and sealed with an official seal on it. What this does is, one, it makes it authentic from who's sending it, but also it's to get just to the person who's meant to receive it. Well, this is an open letter, meaning he wants everybody to know what's in this letter. And the letter is full of lies and accusations against Nehemiah. It says, Nehemiah is just going to become the people's king. The people are going to revolt. They've hired their own prophets. And this is all going to get back to the king of Persia. And Nehemiah is going to be in trouble. So let's meet Nehemiah. Let's talk about this so you don't get in all this trouble. It's all false. It's all meant to intimidate Nehemiah. So Nehemiah stands strong. He stands truthful. Nehemiah knows, hey, they're trying to discredit him. And they're trying to demoralize the people. There's a phrase that says the hands will be too weak to work or cause the hands to drop. This means that the people will be too demoralized, too beat up to even want to continue. They want them to quit. But Nehemiah stands up to all of this. He was attacked, but he stood up in the confidence to God amidst all of the attacks. Nobody likes being attacked, right? It's summertime. Summertime is meant to be outside, right? And we at our house love to be on our deck. But every time we're out there, if we aren't prepared, we're attacked. Mosquitoes, they're nasty little buggers, right? Tiny little annoying creatures. They're ruthless. They come out of nowhere, and they will destroy your good time. But we're prepared. Threefold. Tiki torches, citronella candles, and a thermocell. You might call it overkill, but it works. Thermocell, yes, right? They work. We want to enjoy the decks. We have to be confident in the face of those attacks from the mosquitoes. Mosquitoes, not unlike them, we will be attacked as followers of Jesus. Maybe there'll be those little bites. Maybe it'll be bigger. But we have to be confident in some sort of opposition, some sort of attack that we will face. Hebrews 12, 1-3 says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Let us run with perseverance the race marked for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Run with endurance. Endure what comes. Take it on. Strip off what slows us down and stands in our way. Don't become weary. See, oppositions and attacks, those try to slow us down. They try to stand in our way. They try to make us quit. But confidence in God stands up to those attacks. And those will come in different forms. We're going to break down a few of them. The first one is intimidation. Think of like the schoolyard bully that just picks on everybody. Maybe it's all bark, no real bite. Tells you, you better stop doing that or else. Now, nothing may play out in a physical way, but in words it can, right? You're following Jesus and they say, you're just weak. You're holding on to something that's not real. Don't be so soft. Intimidation can even come in the form of rejection. If you do that or believe that, we're done. We're not friends anymore. You're going to be a Christian. Christians are just judgmental jerks. I want nothing to do with them, so you and I were done. Rejection. These are all forms of intimidation. How about accusations and lies? Nehemiah faced accusations. They were fired at him in a variety of ways. They weren't true. But man, they're like, you're going to be a king. You're going to lead a revolt. They attack Nehemiah's character. Someone says to you, you're only serving that person or the group so you look good. Maybe so you can put it on a resume or an application. You're not that humble. Nobody's that humble, right? You're just trying to look better than that other person over there. Or your plan is, so you're being nice to them, you're going to get them on board, get a following, so you have more clout. Now, here's the problem. Is there are people that actually do those things, but not everybody. So when those attacks are levied at us, it hurts. It builds up anger when somebody spits a false lie or an accusation against you. But confidence in God is standing on his truth in the face of those accusations. In verse 8, Nehemiah stands up to the accusations thrown at him. He's like, there's no truth to what you're saying. You're making the whole thing up. Nehemiah knows he's working for God. He's doing it in an honest and upright way. So he stands for the truth, the confidence of God. So we can call out the lies. You don't have to just absorb the lies. You can call them out. Confidence in God is confidence that the truth will prevail without attacking the attacker. Nehemiah never fires away at Sanballat and attacks him back. Not gonna lie, I'd want to. I'd have all sorts of things to say about him. But Nehemiah doesn't do it. He calls out the lie. Confidence in God is confidence that God will deal with the accuser so we don't have to. I'd love to be up here and say that as followers of Jesus, your life is going to be all white sandy beaches and beautiful waves and sunsets with no attacks, no accusations, no lies, but it doesn't work that way. So we got to have confidence in God in the face of those. Stay truthful and honest. Stand with God in confidence that the lies and the accusations will not tear down what God is building within you and through you. So have confidence that God will make that building even stronger. Let's keep going in Nehemiah 6. This is verses 10 to 14. It says, "One day I went to the house of Shemaiah, son of Delaiah, the son of Mehetabel, who was shut in at his home. He said, 'Let us meet in the house of God inside the temple. Let us close the temple doors because men are coming to kill you. By night they are coming to kill you.' But I said, 'Should a man like me run away? Or should someone like me go into the temple to save his life? I will not go.' I realized that God had not sent him, but that he had prophesied against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. He had been hired to intimidate me so that I would commit a sin by doing this, and then they would give me a bad name to discredit me. Remember Tobiah and Sanballat, my God, because of what they've done. Remember also the prophet Noadiah and how she and the rest of the prophets have been trying to intimidate me." So we meet a new character. This man's name is Shemaiah. He's probably a priest, quite possibly a friend or associate of Tobiah, one of Nehemiah's opponents. And this guy Shemaiah gives Nehemiah a warning. He says, "Look, the people are coming to kill you. They're coming to hurt you. So let's go inside the temple and close the door so that you will be safe." A couple things with this. Nehemiah's never been a man to back down. He ain't afraid. He places his confidence in God, for God and protection. He's like, "Should a man like me go run away?" That's a rhetorical question. Of course not. Nehemiah's not going to run. But then he says, "Should someone like me go into the temple to save his life?" No. See, Nehemiah is not a priest. Nehemiah is just what we would call a layman, which means by Jewish law, he could not go into the temple sanctuary. We learn that in 2 Chronicles 23. He can't go in. So he's an upright man of God. He's not going to break God's law to protect himself. This fact also confirms to Nehemiah that this guy Shemaiah is not from God, because a true prophet of God would not say to Nehemiah, "Hey, protect yourself by sinning against God and breaking the law of Moses." Nehemiah prays that God will remember all of these false prophets and his opponents for what they're doing. They've relied on claiming to be from God to get Nehemiah to stop following God. But again, Nehemiah keeps his confidence of God. He may have been tempted to protect himself, tempted to save himself in an ungodly way, but he doesn't give in to temptation. Lots of things tempt us, right? Anybody hungry? Only when I bring food. Deconstructive key lime pie. Now, deconstructed because, not going to lie, something crushed it in my bag. It was prettier before. We're going to fix that in a minute, though. Now, if you're trying to watch the sugar, count the calories, maybe this tempts you. Maybe it doesn't. Okay, let's do a little more. Tempted yet? Anybody?
Where's the cherry?
Nope. Where's the what?
Cherry.
Okay.
There you go, I'm just for you.
This is not cherry. This is a fresh raspberry sauce, locally sourced from Becky's backyard raspberries.
Oh.
Thanks, Becky. Now who's tempted? Kayla? There you go.
Depends what the crust is.
Graham cracker.
Yeah,
no? Oh, yeah. Tempting, right? Okay. You're still tempted. Go ahead. Somebody can grab it and share with your friends. I don't actually need that. But you might be tempted to eat something that looks really delicious. That whipped cream is going to melt, so somebody grab that whenever you want to. Temptation. Have confidence in the temptation. Lindsay has no confidence. Thank you is going to play into this and take the pie. She's also eaten this before, and she's not giving it up. Here's the thing. Have confidence while you're tempted. I gave multiple forks. You can share. Confidence in temptation. That's right. She's going to share. Mark 1, verses 12 to 3 says, "At once the Spirit sent him, Jesus, out into the wilderness. He was in the wilderness for 40 days being tempted by Satan. He was with the wild animals, and the angels attended to him." See, Jesus went out into the wilderness. He was tempted. He was tempted with anything and everything. Now, we know Jesus did no wrong. Jesus never sinned, okay? He never sinned, but he was still tempted. And I say that so we remember, as we walk through different ways of being tempted, that just feeling the temptation isn't the sin. It's what we do with that temptation. Now, one way we're tempted is maybe we're tempted to sin to alleviate fear. This is where Nehemiah got tempted, right? Shemaiah says, hey, come into the temple for protection. You're afraid of being attacked? Come into the temple, you won't be harmed, even though he would have broken God's law doing that. If we sin to alleviate fear, we don't actually have a healthy fear of the Lord. We have a fear that God isn't who he claims to be. We fear that God won't or can't comfort, protect, or give us peace within the fear. So if we're afraid maybe that that project at work won't finish well, right? Or that we won't do well in the test, so we cheat. Or if we're afraid, hey, we won't be accepted by this group of friends, so we demean somebody or we act in a way that's destructive or dangerous. See, we got rid of the fear through sin. We place the confidence to deal with fear within ourselves rather than the hands of God. Our confidence to alleviate fear should be placed in the hands of God. And when we do that, it doesn't mean everything's perfect or easy in the short term, right? Maybe you won't do well on the test, or that group doesn't want to hang with you right away. But in the long term, our relationship with God grows, and he will lead through the fear and anything that results from it. How about being tempted to satisfy a desire? Many of us have a desire to feel good or to be happy, and there's nothing wrong with that. Have a desire to feel good or happy, but what matters is how we go about satisfying that desire. The temptation might say, hey, lust will make you feel good, so act on it. Satisfy that lust physically. Satisfy that lust visually by looking at something. It'll all make you feel good. Or temptation says substances make you feel good. Smoke this, take that, have another drink. You won't have a care in the world, and you'll feel great. Or temptation says, hey, put someone down to feel better about yourself. Low self-esteem or low view of yourself. Hey, if you put somebody else down with jokes or insults or whatever, you'll feel a little bit better, right? Now, all of these may satisfy a desire to feel good really quickly, but then they're gone. Physical satisfaction disappears. The buzz or the high fades, and the pedestal you put yourself on gets knocked out from underneath you. When we give into those, we lack the confidence that God will satisfy us. God will satisfy us. It's just in a little different way. God satisfies us with his presence. He satisfies us by being a constant and consistent loving presence in our lives. He satisfies us with this provision. We will have what we need. He will provide for us. And he satisfies us with his grace, his unmerited favor that doesn't turn on us even when we give in to the temptations. That satisfaction, unlike the sinful satisfactions, never fade, never disappear. Earlier this week, I read the story of the woman at the well with Jesus in John chapter 4. And in that story, Jesus tells the woman, whoever drinks the water from that well will thirst again. But whoever drinks the living water that Jesus provides will never thirst again. The sinful satisfactions are like the water from the well. You will keep getting thirsty and needing to find a way to satisfy them. But the satisfaction from Jesus will constantly and consistently sustain us. Now, if you struggle with these types of temptations or others like them, you're not alone. Many of us struggle with these. But don't just accept giving into them. Pray, spend time with God, ask for strength, and then have somebody you trust involved with you to help you fight them off. In the church world, we use the phrase accountability partner sometime, where you have somebody that checks in with you like, hey, how are you doing with this? Helps you, gives you strength to not give in. So help place your confidence and temptation into the hands of God. Be confident in temptation. Let's finish up Nehemiah 6 here, verses 15 to 19. It says, so the wall was completed on the 25th day of Elul in 52 days. When all our enemies had heard about this, all the surrounding nations were afraid and lost their self-confidence because they realized that this work had been done with the help of our God. Also in those days, the nobles of Judah were sending many letters to Tobiah, and replies from Tobiah kept coming to them. For many in Judah were under oath to him, since he was son-in-law to Shechaiah, son of Arah, and his son Jehohanan had married the daughter of Meshullam, son of Berechiah. Moreover, they kept reporting to me his good deeds and then telling him what I said. And Tobiah sent letters to intimidate me. Now, after about less than a couple months, the wall's finished. We did it, right? The wall is built. Now, thank you. Yeah. Many of the opponents of Nehemiah and the wall, they're put off. They're like, man, how did they do this in such a short time? They know the hand of God was on this and God was helping them. It couldn't have been done without him. But the intimidation doesn't stop. Tobiah keeps it up. He's pretty well connected inside of Jerusalem because of his family ties. So Nehemiah is still getting threatening letters. And people inside the wall are telling Nehemiah good things about Tobiah, turning around telling Tobiah what Nehemiah is thinking, what's going on with Nehemiah. Nehemiah has to have continued confidence in God that even though the wall is finished, God is still with him in his future plans. He's got to have confidence to keep going. years ago before I had kids, there was a year I ran in 2 half marathons. And I needed a lot of motivation and help to get through those races. They're long, right? And some of that came from signs. I love the signs people hold on races, if you've ever done them along the way. And I looked up some funny motivational signs for during races. And some people will say, they put on a sign, hey, remember, you paid to do this. Get your money's worth. It's true. You paid to run a long way. I trained as long as you to hold this sign. You're stuck between a walk and a hard pace. That's, yeah. Or run like your mom just used your full name. Mine was my grandma, but same idea. Like, when they go Jeffrey Paul Wood, ooh boy, better get going. We all need a push or some confidence to keep going, and that includes following God. Philippians 1:3-6 says, I thank my God every time I remember you. In all my prayers for all of you, I always pray with you because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. God begins a good work in you, and he will carry it on to completion, either when Jesus returns or we go to be with him for eternity. See, the wall's finished, right? It's only chapter 6. We got 7 to go. Nehemiah's going to have to keep going. He's not done. He was finished with the wall. That was kind of his assignment. But his calling is still being lived out. We're going to break down those two that I just said, calling and assignment, real quick. Assignments end, callings do not. And I'll kind of share what I mean in my own life to differentiate. I believe part of the calling, at least God has on my life, is to help people grow in their personal relationships with Jesus to a deeper level and then live out that relationship in their lives. I've had a variety of assignments that have played into that. I led worship at another church for a long time, led men's group, pastoring this church, and also just personal relationships with people. Confidence in God means we keep going, we keep following God. We stay aware of what God has for us in our lives. And as one maybe assignment ends and we wait for the next one, we remember God's never done because the calling is always on our lives. But take confidence in that assignment, which you just completed, because you hear God say the words, well done, good and faithful servant. Those are the words used in the parable, the bags of gold in Matthew 25. God's happy. God's pleased when we live out, when we do what he has called us to do and the assignment he has given us. So take confidence in what you've done for him as you listen for what's next. Now, maybe you're sitting here being like, man, I don't know what my calling is or what my assignment is. That's okay. It took me a long time to really kind of usher out and spend time with God. Like, what is my calling? What does God really have for me? That's okay. Spend time with God. Ask him. Talk to him. Maybe right now what he has for you is just getting closer to him and growing in your relationship with him as he lays a foundation for what's to come. That's okay. Or maybe you are there now. You kind of know what the calling is. Get with God and be like, what is the assignment? What am I doing right now? God, what do you have for me? And then as you complete an assignment, you see what God has next. Don't get overconfident in yourself. Keep God as your main source of confidence. Don't think, hey, this went really well. I got this next one on my own. Or, other side, that didn't play out so well, and I really trusted God. I'm going to do this one on my own. Keep the confidence in God. Stay confident in God that he will guide you to what's next. He will guide you through what's next. And he's pleased with what you've done. Even if it didn't go as you thought, you followed him, you listened, you obeyed, God is pleased. Confidence that God will continue to grow you and develop you and give you rest. Following Jesus never stops. Jesus building you as his followers never stops. So let him build you, build your confidence in him, and continue to grow brick by brick. Confidence is a brick. We'll wrap up with this. God builds our confidence in him as he builds us. It's a reminder to stay anchored in him as we grow. He gives us confidence in him when we're attacked. We can stand up in truth and in strength to intimidation and to accusation. He gives us confidence in temptation. We may be tempted to sin to alleviate fear, to satisfy a desire, but confidence in God reminds us that he satisfies us. And his satisfaction never fades. And God gives the confidence to keep going. Whether what we've done is finished and went great or didn't go so well, we continue to follow God and live out his calling in our lives. We always put that confidence in God. Rely on God. Confidence. Let's pray. God, I thank you for this morning and this example we get from Nehemiah in this chapter, God. That idea of confidence. God, I pray that we would come to you as our source of confidence in you only, God. That we wouldn't put it in ourselves and our own abilities or in anything else, God. We remember that all of that comes from you. So we constantly come to you for confidence. Whether, God, we're in fear or we're afraid of something, we'd be confident in you to protect us. God, when we're tempted, for anything we're tempted about, we would come to you to fight off that temptation. God, we know that you will give us a way out of that temptation with your strength and your grace. And God, that we would have confidence in you to keep going. Whether things have gone well, they haven't gone well, or God, we're just not even sure where we're going. But that we would just always keep going in you. We would keep coming to your feet. We would sit. We would listen. And we would just be so sensitive to following you, God, and that we'd be confident in the direction you have for us, God. We thank you that you are our confidence. In your name.